We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We got a lot to get to today. Coach Jim Harbaugh added a couple of coaches to his coaching staff. We've got a senior who gained an extra year of eligibility. A lot of guys to talk about in the Senior Bowl as well. We'll get to all of that today on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
Carlo Kemp is a guy that everybody can look to and say, that's how we're supposed to do it, because he shows up every day and tries to get better. He has no bad days.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back to In the Trenches. As I mentioned, we've got a loaded podcast today. So thanks for joining us. When you guys get a chance and you download this podcast, make sure you give us a review. You like us, send us some comments so that we know what you want to hear. We're going to talk a little basketball. We'll obviously talk football for the majority of it, but also subscribe. Make sure you get that download as fast as you possibly can so it's in your inbox on a Wednesday morning when we generally come out with this. We'll have a few special editions throughout the offseason as opportunity permits, but my partner, Brian Bush, who is the play-by-play voice along with Terry Mills of Michigan basketball, has joined us again today, as he does on every episode. But Brian, tough weekend for the Wolverines on the basketball court.
Yes, and on the airplane, too. Did you hear about that story?
I didn't hear. I saw your tweet that you were happy to land.
Yeah.
But I don't know what happened prior to that. I saw what happened on TV in regards Correct. To the game. We'll get to that in a second, but what happened on the plane?
So first off with the game, so we had our Inside Michigan basketball radio show on Monday night, which, by the way, we don't have it on this football podcast. You can go to mgoblue.com. There have been some people asking about those archives. mgoblue.com, and go to the audio tab. You can find those archives. We're hoping to potentially one day expand to a basketball podcast as well, but for now we're keeping this mostly football. So we're doing the show on Monday night, and I really wanted to asked you on, so 30 foul shots to 5 foul shots. BS, huh? And yeah. Just shove the microphone in his face. But that's not good hosting. That's not fair. And I know he probably deep down in his heart wanted to talk about that too. It was frustrating. So, you know, it had been snowing most of the day in Iowa City. We fly in out of Cedar Rapids when you go out to face the Hawkeyes. So it was a 20 mile drive that took about 45-50 minutes because of the weather. And normally the team flies out after the game. We drive out to the airport. They sell us. When we get there, we're not flying out tonight because of the weather. Mm-hmm. Even though multiple times it's been confirmed. Whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Safety first. So we have a noon Central Time scheduled flight Saturday. We go out there. We get there around 11:30. Go through security, stuff like that. Get to the plane. We find out, hey, you know, we need to de-ice the plane. Of course. We get on this thing. It's a popsicle. Like, it was frozen under. And something I learned, they don't de-ice a plane until it's ready to fly. At least that was what they told mm-hmm. us. So there's some work to do. We don't hear anything. we don't see anything. Like, you can tell, you know, when a plane's getting de-iced. It's not just a little, like, toothbrush there. Like, it's
they
loud.
Hose it down.
Yeah, that's right. So we're waiting and waiting and waiting. Well, apparently they ran out of the liquid
the
or whatever it's called,
fluid.
The de-icing fluid. Sounds like you've dealt with this before.
Oh, I have had a few occurrences where it never seems to go smoothly, but please continue.
So we're still waiting, and they tell us, all right, we're getting it here soon. Then I hear they're ordering pizzas, which is great because, you know, pizza, but that means we're probably going to be there for a while. If they're ordering pizza, it takes a little while to get a pizza delivery to a tarmac. So we get the pizza, and we're still waiting. And then we hear, oh, we might need to get a new plane. I don't know if this is going to be. It was like 2 degrees on Saturday in Cedar Rapids. So
Basketball guys cold, were you?
I was a little chilly, John. Yeah. I was a little chilly, yeah.
See, full for me, jacket, sleeves, ball cap.
I mean,
Probably a beanie.
Listen, I'm not an athlete, man. You can knock me. I'd rather be warm. I don't care. Bring on the jokes. My feet were freezing. No joke. So we find out, we might need to get another plane there because this one's not going to be able to be de-iced. It's a smaller airport, so they don't have the same materials that like DTW would have, which I get. But when you're sitting on a plane for 7 hours, you kind of get over it. So apparently there was a plane on the way when they finally got enough fluid and got the thing de-iced for us to take off. Though probably about 20 minutes before we headed for the runway, we heard we might have to de-ice and then refuel because we've been sitting on the plane for 7 hours and then re-de-ice because it's nighttime by this point. Mm-hmm. Things freeze quickly and then take off. And they said, well, maybe by then the plane might be here, so we might just switch planes. Fortunately, we got off probably at 7 o'clock central time, got into DTW around 9 Eastern, quick 1 hour flight, just a 7 hour buildup. And we got back. So it was an experience. Every single slice of that pizza got devoured.
I'm sure.
But yeah, it was not the ideal trip. I will say, and this isn't just me being all PR-y, and I get if people think it is that way though, team handled it really well. Like that was a super frustrating thing. You're coming off a loss. You've struggled on the road. You have a weekend off, right? Like you've got Saturday, Sunday, which isn't very common for a college athlete. There are not a lot of Friday games in football or basketball or anything along those lines. And they handled it really well. It was a disappointment, but it'll be a fun story to say the next time we get off the runway at a normal time.
Well, so here's the first question I have for you. What time did you get to the airport on Friday night?
Probably about 11:45 central.
And that's when they tell you, sorry, no plane.
Correct.
And how many are in the travel party, approximately?
15 players, 7 coaches, 4 managers, 20 support staff. Yeah, I mean, you're looking at 40 to 45,
something like that. And so where do you go at midnight in Cedar Rapids that can house 50 people at the drop of a hat?
Fortunately, because there was an anticipated issue with travel just based on the snow, Chris Hunter and Lisa Nicholson, they do a great job as kind of the two point people on the road. They had worked with the hotel we stayed at Friday night to make sure we had rooms.
Oh, so there's a plan
for Thursday
B.
Night for Friday. Yes. The problem was that was 45 minutes away. There wasn't one right next to the airport. But let's just say there were some people pretty fired up that we didn't get that phone call, you know, at Carver Hawkeye Arena saying, hey, don't come out here. But they were trying to get everybody home, which, you know, I understand. And you know, again, safety first. But boy, when you're on hour 6th of the sitting on the plane 1 day after you're supposed to leave, you're a little more willing to roll the dice.
At that point, it's communication first.
Correct.
And then safety. So let's get to the basketball side of things. You mentioned it. There was a big discrepancy in regards to, foul shots and fouls. I was watching the game, and I know at one point Coach Howard got fired up. Mm-hmm. And what was, from your opinion, I know you get courtside seats. Mm-hmm. What was going on? I mean, why was there such a discrepancy?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard a lot about, you know, guys working the officials, and I haven't been around the college game enough to know who to be able to watch it from courtside and sense who's good and who's bad. I've heard Fran McCaffrey is pretty good at it. And when you have a bigger team like he has with a coach who's allegedly pretty good at that, that's a good combination for you. And the technical you're talking about came on, it wasn't a foul call. It ended up being a foul call, but Luka Garza had a pretty blatant travel that wasn't called, and then they whistled a foul. I think it was on John Teske, who he just couldn't buy a break in that game from a whistle perspective. I understand that you can't look at it from the broad picture of, oh, well, look at these stats. Why aren't the numbers closer? But Michigan outscored Iowa in the paint, yet they were out foul shotted 30-5.
Right.
That's a little tough to swallow. And, you know, Juwan got his technical on that no travel into a foul call. I'll just say this. You got a really physical player. Luka Garza is really good, and he's got a great idea of where he's going. But he coaxed 12 fouls, and I believe got called for two.
Right.
That seems a little much. Regardless, Juwan said it. Terry and I talked about it late in the game. There's a lot of adversity, but Michigan still had a chance to win that game. And you can't look at it, you know, long into the distance of, oh, well, we got screwed. You can't. You need to learn from it. You need to grow from it. And Juwan, I mean, gosh, we were talking about it off the mic last week. I got my first taste of really mad Juwan Howard in postgame from the Sunday Minnesota game. He was fired up at his team. He did not feel like they played well defensively. It did not do what you needed to do to win the game. And you compare that tone to how he was Friday, where he was really proud of that team. They overcame a lot. They still don't have Isaiah Livers.
Right.
We'll see if he plays. We're coming out this Wednesday, so you know we'll see if he plays tonight against Penn State. There's optimism that could happen. But they had chances, but they played their tails off. They're going to win a lot of games with the effort they put forth on Friday, and it just didn't happen.
So the game's coming up, as you mentioned, tonight, Wednesday night. They've got Penn State at home on Saturday at noon. All right. I need to prepare you because this is a very important matchup.
I know it is.
This is my wife's alma mater, Illinois. And we lost in Champaign. And I understand it's very hard to win on the road, especially in the Big Ten. And we'll talk about the challenges of winning on the road. I am confident in your ability,
mine,
and in Coach Howard's ability to make sure that this one is a win against the Fighting Illini.
Yeah. Well, Juwan and I have a combined 19 years of NBA playing experience. So we'll use that together to join forces to knock off the Illini. Yeah, so you got the football win, but the basketball loss. So this is kind of the rubber match.
This is the rubber match. Yes, and so this one needs to be two to one.
Yeah.
Two out of three.
Yeah.
I'll get the math right eventually.
Yeah. We're going to win by 23.
Yes. That would be awesome. Yes. At the end of the first half.
In all seriousness, this is a really big stretch because Michigan plays of its next eight, five at home, one neutral, and the two road games are Nebraska and I believe it's Northwestern. So those are the two teams that aren't really in the conversation for at-larges in the NCAA tournament of the Big Ten. There was an ESPN prognosticator, I think it was Lenardi, who came out with 12 Big Ten teams making the tournament. Now, that's probably not going to happen because you're going to have a team of this 12 that happens to go 6-14 in the league. You can't put that team in. But the fact that there are 12 in the conversation, impressive. Michigan will not face any of those top 12 in a road environment over basically the next month plus. You don't have to sweep this by any stretch. But Michigan has gone from being a 1-2 seed when they went to the Bahamas and won the battle for Atlantis to I've seen them as a 7-8. Mm-hmm. You're getting to a point now where, yeah, there's no doubt Michigan's had some tough road games. They're the only team in the league to play four of their first six in the league on the road. They've had a tough schedule. Mm-hmm. But this is the stretch now, starting with these two games at home this week, where they're going to face two likely NCAA tournament teams these next two games. I mean, 1-1 will be okay, but 2-0 is if you want to still feel really comfortable about your tournament hopes, you got to get two here.
Well, you do, and the advantage in the Big Ten. So across the country, there's this perception that it's hard to win on the road, mm-hmm. but overall, it's really about 55% of home wins.
Yeah.
In the Big Ten, it's closer, it's between 80 and 85% in regards to the home team being victorious. Why is it, what makes the Big Ten venues so challenging?
I don't know if it's so much the venues or if it's just the depth of the league. I mean, and I will say, you know, Northwestern's not really a hostile environment. Nebraska is. They pack it there. Like, they love Nebraska out there,
oh,
as
yeah.
you know. And
well, and they love what they honestly, they love what Scott Frost is trying to do in the football side of things, and they also love having Fred Hoiberg and what he's trying to do on the basketball side of things. And it's been a challenge this year for Nebraska because they've had so many transfers. They don't really have an identity, but they're a team along with Northwestern that at some point during this, the rest of this college basketball season, the rest of the Big Ten schedule, they're going to beat somebody, and it may be at home, it may be on the road, but them and Northwestern, there's no gimme, guess what I'm getting at, in the Big Ten.
No, I heard long ago, I love this analogy. I'm a terrible golfer, so I don't get birdies or even pars very often, but I heard that in conference, if you go at it like this, you can kind of tell who's the best. A home win and a road loss is a par. A home loss is a bogey, and a road win is a birdie.
Okay.
So if you look at it like that, Michigan right now is even par. They've done, in essence, what they're supposed to have happen. You win at home and you lose on the road. They're 2-4 with two home games, four road games. This is their opportunity. They can't bogey a lot because if they do, you're going to really be in a tough spot because Michigan, after they play Nebraska and Northwestern on the road, you've got Ohio State, you've got Maryland. There's one other road game that they have to play that's relevant, that resonates.
Rutgers,
yeah, and Purdue. So you've got, after this stretch, you've got some real, I mean, the finish of the schedule is at Rutgers, at Purdue, home against Wisconsin, at Ohio State, home against Nebraska, at Maryland. That's not an easy stretch by any measure. So, you know, it's, I don't know what it is, but I just think when you've got a league where, I mean, you've got legitimate teams up and down. I mean,
well, and I did this last week because you and I talked on the Big Ten channel on Sirius Radio. And so I went back in regards to how tough it is to win on the road and how tough it is to win in the Big Ten, because you mentioned 12 teams could possibly make the tournament. I agree. I don't think that's going to happen. But last year we had 8. This year, I think at a minimum, we're going to have 10.
10, yep.
So it's tough. But you look at anybody's schedule and you say, okay, who's got the toughest, you know, toughest stretch from here on out? And you really can't say anybody is tougher than anybody else's, because every game is a throw up, other than, you know, the advantage of playing at home, which we already talked about.
Sure.
But the road games, the teams that you have to play, whoever finds that secret sauce to win on the road, whether it's Michigan State, whether it's Rutgers, because Rutgers is right now is undefeated at home.
Yeah.
And they're ranked for the first time in 41 years.
I saw somebody, Jerry Palm of CBS, had him as a 4 seed. And good for them. Like, Steve Peichel's one hell of a coach. He's really good. He's the perfect coach for that program. And they've taken advantage of. Penn State is not normally a power. They're the team coming into Chrysler tonight. That's not an easy get. So, I mean, it really is interesting. You know, we talk about in football how, you know, other programs need to step up for the whole of the Big Ten. On the basketball side, that surely has happened.
Yeah, yeah. It's a deep league from, you could look at it from top to bottom, and you could look at it from bottom to top and say, okay, the depth of this conference is obviously better than anywhere else in the country. But enough basketball.
I was about to say, man.
You know, I mean, we kind of ran on.
We're going to get you in the maze rage, you know, your chest painted.
I'll be there.
Saturday?
Saturday.
Heck
at
yeah.
Noon. Maze Rage. You look for the guy with the big old yellow belly. That'll be me. I'll be a yellow belly.
Shocking. John's coming to the noon game. That's really a surprise.
Yeah.
Fired up. Started at 9?
Uh-huh.
All right. 7 from 77. Number one on the football side. Head coach Jim Harbaugh confirming last week in a scrum with reporters, Carlo Kemp will be back. He's earned his 5th year of eligibility. How big is this, seemingly as an addition, right, to this 2020 roster?
It is. And so Carlo Kemp, obviously, we know he was a captain last year, has the opportunity to be a two-time captain, which is great for Carlo. But it's also great for this team because we've had Carlo on this podcast a number of times, and he's a guy that, as we've seen through the course of just last year, can battle through injury. He's going to give everything you possibly can. And we talked on last week's podcast about what Michigan is doing now to create success in the spring, throughout the summer, and ultimately in the fall when games start up. And Carlo Kemp is a guy that everybody can look to and say, that's how we're supposed to do it, because he shows up every day and tries to get better. He has no bad days. There are days where, yeah, he's a little bit banged up, whether he's in the training room, he's on the field. Players, teammates are going to look at him and say, that's how I need to do it. And if we get 84 other guys that are on scholarship and 40 other guys that are walk-ons to mirror what he's doing, then, yeah, we've got a great chance of being successful in 2020. And Carlo Kemp will be a key component to that in that defensive line room.
Spoiler alert, we're probably going to have Carlo on the podcast a couple times throughout 2020 as well, believe it or not.
Yeah, and I know we normally have players on. This is the start of the offseason. Everybody's getting caught up in regards to what they're doing on campus and getting started with this semester. So as we get further into this offseason, we'll continue to have some more coaches, obviously. Some guys we're going to talk about here in a minute and introduce them to you, but players as well.
Yeah, let's get into a couple of new coaches first. At safeties coach, Bob Shoup coming in and someone who Michigan defensive coordinator Don Brown familiar with.
He is. Bob Shoup played at Yale, graduated from Yale. So this will be a step up academically for him. I hope he can handle it coming to Michigan. But he was a GA under Don Brown when they were both at Yale. So he's a disciple of Don Brown's defense, but he's also a guy that has gone out and he's been a defensive coordinator most recently at Mississippi State. And he's competed in the SEC. He's been around. So he has taken Don Brown's defense and tweaked it a little bit in regards to how it fits best against teams like Alabama in the SEC West, against teams like LSU that they have to play there on a regular basis. So he's bringing that idea base and that base of knowledge back to Don Brown and to this defense. And obviously, Bob Shoup will be coaching safeties. He'll join Mike Zordich in the defensive secondary. And Coach Zordich, one of the reasons we continue to get top talent at the corner position is because he is a guy that has shown that he can develop guys and put them in the NFL. And so I think our secondary is in extremely good hands, and Bob Shoup will be a great addition to this staff.
Number three, another new member, Brian Jean-Marie. He will join the staff as the new linebackers coach, and a guy who's from the Charlie Strong side of things, been with Coach Strong for a long time. Now he comes to U of M.
Yeah, and this is – it'll be actually in terms of names. We lose Anthony Campanile.
Yeah,
which was fun to start saying. He obviously goes down to be a member of the Miami Dolphins staff, and we wish him the best of luck to Brian Jean-Marie, which I think will be very fun to say on a repeated basis. And other than that, he brings, again, he has spent time at Texas. He spent time at USF. And coming in to coach these linebackers, I think, is a great addition for recruiting at that position. He's shown to be a really good recruiter. But also, when you look at guys like Cam McGrone and you look at the linebackers that are going to be back next year, we'll get Josh Ross back, another guy that, along with Carlo Kemp, will have that fifth year available, and we'll have young talent, we'll have depth, we'll have experience. And I really think that this is a great addition in regards to taking Cam McGrone and that group to the next level.
Yeah, it's going to be fun watching Cam McGrone next season and beyond. He's a special player. Number four, seemingly an up-and-coming and ascending, as head coach Jim Harbaugh would talk about, His son, Jay Harbaugh, new responsibility. He will keep his role as a running backs coach. He'll also be the team's special teams coordinator. Unique balance, no doubt, but he's had a role in special teams as an assistant pretty much his entire time here in Ann Arbor. So now he's taking on a little bit more. And, you know, Jim Harbaugh's talked about his son, and he can't, you know, it's probably awkward for him to rave about him, but there's no doubt he has a lot of faith in Jay and what he brings to the table, and this is another example of proof of that.
It is. And so Jay Harbaugh has been the assistant along with Chris Partridge, who was the special teams coordinator, who's obviously moved on to Mississippi State. So you can see kind of how everything bounces around in college football. But all six phases of special teams. And one of the things that you want to make sure that you do as a coach or as if you're running any program is consistency. When guys from year to year understand what the expectations are, they understand what the concepts are, and you can continue to build on those from year to year, this is a move to create consistency in the special teams situation. So you've got three phases, obviously offense, defense, special teams. We'll talk a little bit more about the offense later, but we'll have some more consistency on the offensive side this year with Josh Gattis in his second season implementing that offense. We'll have consistency with Jay Harbaugh understanding all of the concepts and coaching them on a regular basis since he's been here. And the special teams have been a strength of Michigan football. And then on the defensive side, again, consistency with Don Brown, obviously bringing in some fresh ideas with Bob Shoup and Brian Jean-Marie. But consistency, as a coach once told me, Gary Moeller, consistency is the truest measure of performance. And Michigan has been consistent at special teams. Need to see more consistency on in the other two phases. And I think this move in special teams helps us do that.
Number five on today's 7 from 77, a departure. Michael Dwumfor from the Michigan defensive side of things, transferring to his home state. He'll be at Rutgers for his final season of eligibility. Thoughts on his move and what it means for some of the younger guys, more opportunities for maybe the likes of Chris Hinton and others?
Well, for Mike, it's a chance. One, he graduated.
Sure.
And we're extremely proud of him for doing that. Didn't see the opportunities that he wanted here at Michigan in regards to what he wanted to do on the field. So he's going to go closer to home. Get a chance. And that's what you see this transfer portal. What you see, I think the big benefit, especially for grad transfers, is the fact that, hey, you can get closer to home and play your final season. Whether it's the final season in preparation for an NFL career or it's just the final season that you're going to play in front of family and friends. And this is a move. I think it's a good move for Mike. We'll obviously get a chance to see him in the Big Ten East, and we'll best of luck to him. But it also provides more opportunity and more reps in practice and in games for some of those young guys like Chris Hinton and everybody else along. Mozzie Smith is a guy that is going to benefit from having more opportunity, being bumped up the depth chart. All of those guys need more opportunity in practice. They'll get that starting in spring.
Number six, looking ahead to this weekend's Senior Bowl, we're going to split up the Wolverines representatives on offense and defense. There are three of each. So let's talk about the three offensive guys, Shea Patterson, Sean McCune, Ben Bredesen. What do you think are key for them as they really get their first opportunity post-Michigan to impress NFL scouts?
Well, let's start with Shea Patterson. And obviously for him, it's going to be consistency in terms of his accuracy, his ability to, you know, be accurate on the move, to be able to make decisions at the line of scrimmage. And a lot of that, for quarterbacks, you're not going to see a lot being shown in the game.
Sure.
His benefit, and all of these players, their benefit is the fact that they are amongst NFL coaches. The Detroit Lions staff is down there as well as the Cincinnati Bengals. And so you get a taste of what NFL coaches are like, what meetings are like, what practices are like, and those coaches get a good look at these guys. So it's important for Shea Patterson to, one, be accurate, and two, be decisive. That, I think, if he can do those two things, he'll help himself. Now, for Sean McCune, the biggest thing for a tight end, especially a guy that has excelled at catching the ball, is to go down there and continue to do those things, but show that you have that extra level of being able to set the edge, be a edge, you know, be a blocker up front. If you can be added to that offensive line, then it increases your, you know, just it increases your value And I think Sean McCune, if he can show that he can get good fits, he understands the concepts of the run game, he can run his feet, get some movement up front, and work and communicate with tackles, I think that will benefit him as well. And then Ben Bredesen. Ben is one of those guys that when you hear anybody talk, they talk about his ability to pass protect, and that's been great. Now we need to see when he gets down there and he's in one-on-one run or they're in a full line drill and it is all, you know, run blocking, how well does he fire off the ball? What's his pad level? What's his ability in terms of his footwork? What are his steps like? What are his hands like? What's his explosion like? Can he get movement on a defensive tackle? That's where Ben can really help himself out.
And lastly, on today's 7 from 77, the defensive side, Kalik Hudson, Josh Metellus, Josh Uche, three leaders on this Michigan team, they're getting a chance to showcase their skills.
And I'll talk about Kalik and Josh first, because those are two guys that have a unique skill set. Is Kalik a linebacker? Is he a nickelback? Is he a safety? Those are the types of things that he has to show or showcase that, one, either he can do it all or he's going to be put in a position and then he's going to have to show. If he's a linebacker, he's going to have to show those coverage skills, which obviously would translate to being a defensive back as well. Continue to showcase his pass rush ability from that linebacker position. And I think if he can – at the point of contact, when they're doing those full line drills, show that he can hold up against those bigger offensive tackles and guards in the run game, that will help him out. And Josh Uche, same thing. We talked to him at the beginning of the year about being an every down guy. That was his goal, not being just a pass rush specialist. But he also has that ability, whether he lines up at linebacker or he lines up at defensive end, to cover guys out of the backfield. So it'll be interesting to see how NFL teams view those two guys, how they fit into their system, because everybody in the NFL runs different systems. They have different needs and wants. And so those guys, if they go to the right team, can be very successful. If they don't, it's going to be a challenge just because they have very unique skill sets. And then in regards to Josh Metellus, it's just going to be about coverage skills and identifying, run, pass, run support, all of those decision making, his footwork, his hips, all of those things in regards to being able to cover some of the speedy guys, making sure that he can roam around in the secondary and be that support in the run game and also in the pass game.
There is a dish called the Bacon Explosion.
Oh.
Do you know? Have you heard of this before?
I have not. Where's this?
So it was created in 2008 in Kansas City by two wonderful gentlemen. I don't remember their names. Not relevant, but we thank them for their service.
Mm-hmm.
It is filled with spiced sausage, crumbled bacon, and barbecue sauce. It is then wrapped in bacon.
Ooh.
And it is the size of a football.
The size of a football?
Approximately.
My God. That's amazing.
Yes.
The pigskin in its truest form. That's... good Lord.
So,
take that fumble drill. I win. Every time. Where'd the ball go? I don't know.
I've got the explosion. So if you're looking for a Super Bowl dish to really wow the crowd and potentially...
It goes well with my bacon bombs.
Yes. Oh, well, have I heard about
my
the bacon bombs?
You take a... what are those little potato bites? A tater tot.
Yep.
Put a little cream cheese, a little jalapeno, wrap it in bacon, bake it for, 10, 15 minutes till it's just nice and looks yummy. And you've got yourself a bacon bomb.
I wish that was part of a recipe. Just bake it till it looks yummy. Yes. And move on.
that's how I bake everything.
I like that. That's got a little kick to it. The jalapeno.
Because when you bake a cake, right, or you bake chocolate chip cookies, first of all, the dough or the mix is always the best part.
Yeah. So, see, every part of the chocolate chip cookie baking process makes it look yummy. I'd probably never cook it, and if I did, I'd look in there for like 30 seconds and go, that's done.
Yeah, when it looks yummy, yeah. That's when you bring it out. And if you overcook it, then they're hard. They're still all right, but if they're a little doughy, they're a little chewy, that's the perfect yumminess for a chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah, I think cookies are my favorite dessert, chocolate chip cookies, because literally at every point it's delicious. I want a cookie now. But yeah, Bacon Explosion, potentially the official dish of our podcast. I mean, that is... That is right up our alley.
Football sized.
Yes. Fourth and short, John, some national topics to discuss. Some quarterback news, which, let's face it, with the way that the college football is structured now, with opportunities that the players have, with how ready a lot of high school players have been coming in, the likes of Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields and some of these other guys who come in, and almost Jake Fromm, and almost immediately make an impact. There was a report, I believe it was by The Athletic, talking about how the recruiting class quarterbacks of, I think, 4 years ago, 60% had transferred. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the case. It's going to be kind of like the equivalent of college football free agency. And the moves that we learned as of now from the past week, Felipe Franks transferring to Arkansas, De'Eriq King, remember, he was going to stay at Houston after sitting out the final games, except right. for he wasn't going to at all. He's now going to Miami. Another pretty big fish. It's not a huge name because he's waited his turn at Clemson. Chase Bryce, we don't know where he's going to go. What stands out about some of that news?
Well, it's when you look at, you know, from Baker Mayfield, Heisman Trophy winner, transfer from Texas Tech. Kyler Murray, transfer, Heisman Trophy winner. You look at the guys that were in New York this year. Mm-hmm. You've got Joe Burrow, transfer from Ohio State to LSU. Jalen Hurts, transfer from Alabama to Oklahoma. Justin Fields, transfer from Georgia up to – I mean, you honestly – it's hard for, I think, the average fan to figure out who is who and who is where, because especially at the quarterback position. But it's more unique at the quarterback position because there's only one guy that's going to play. And if you're number two and you're waiting your turn and you see a better opportunity somewhere else, because Felipe Franks, all right, just take example, he gets hurt. And then Kyle Trask comes in for Florida, and the team performs better. It doesn't mean Kyle Trask is better than Felipe Franks. It's just he's a better fit for Florida. So Felipe Franks sits out the rest of the year due to injury, but then decides he's going to transfer, goes to Arkansas. And I think this is unique because, or it seems odd, first of all, that anybody would transfer to Arkansas. But Sam Pittman, their new coach, was the offensive line coach at Georgia. I think he is going to be a guy that we want to watch at Arkansas. He's a guy that when he left Georgia, as their former offensive line coach, that's when I think you start to see a lot of guys from that team declare for the NFL because they don't necessarily want to go on without the guy that was the glue in that offense. And a lot of times your offensive line coach is, your offensive line is obviously a key component, but Sam Pittman just had that personality. He's a great recruiter. And he's a guy that people just want to be around. They want to play for. So getting Felipe Franks to start that program, I think, is a huge get for Sam Pittman and for Arkansas. Felipe Franks going there, I don't know that necessarily does anything for his career, but he will get an opportunity to play. De'Eriq King, I think all of us, when he decided to tell Coach Holgorsen that he was going to sit out after those four games, and we all remember the story that, you know, hey, I'm going to redshirt because I want to continue to work on my game. I want to make sure that I'm ready for my senior year. We all knew that this was going to happen. And you can't hold a kid. When he comes out and says, my intention is to come back to Houston, it very well may have been at that time. But as he sits around, he looks around college football and says, I have an opportunity to play at a Power 5 school and be a starter, and looking at Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, Justin Fields, the success of these transfer quarterbacks, now all of a sudden he says, well, maybe I do want to look around. And he does. I wouldn't hold it against him in regards to making the decision that is best for him, and because he is a guy that has found out how to work the system, work the rule. It'll be interesting to see if there's any tweaks made to this four-game red shirt rule. This is something that all of the coaches wanted. I don't think they foresaw that this would be a possibility. But as with any rule changes, sooner or later, somebody's going to find out a way to work the system, and we'll see if they tweak it at all. Chase Bryce, I think a great landing spot for him. And I don't necessarily know that it will be where he goes, but Jeff Scott, former offensive coordinator at Clemson, now the head coach down at USF, look for Chase Bryce to at least make a visit down there because it's a system that he's very familiar with. I think Jeff Scott, if he's a smart guy that I know he is, he's going to try and get him to come down there because what better way to kick off your first year as a head coach, your first opportunity, than with a quarterback that you know everything about?
people forget, remember Joe Burrow, his number two option was Cincinnati because that's where Luke Fickell went.
Right.
I mean, Joe Burrow almost went to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So if you're Chase Bryce, you're probably looking, okay, can I get a legit Power 5 opportunity? And if not, hey, that's a pretty good spot. USF is a good program. They've been relevant recently. The American is kind of that top group of five spot. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There's been a lot of love for him out there because he's had to wait his turn behind Trevor Lawrence, who, I mean, if they win the national title next year, he might go down as one of the best, you know, to ever play quarterback in college. Speaking of Clemson, number two, Travis Etienne. Deciding to come back, you rarely see that from a running back like him, who was going to be probably a day two pick, which for a running back is pretty high because a lot of running backs don't go in the first round. Your thoughts on that, and you know, we'll get into your top five, so don't preview that. But I mean, that really solidifies Clemson as beyond a doubt one of the favorites to go to the playoff.
Well, I think when you look at the running back class this year, and we saw that a little bit with the wide receiver class this year. It's really deep.
That's true.
You know, DeAndre Swift coming out of Georgia, J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State, Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin. This is a very deep running back group. And on top of that, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire from LSU is in that group. And you look at the guys that, you know, running backs aren't typically, not a lot of them are taken in the first round anymore because the NFL has changed. This may be a set of circumstances where we see one, two, maybe three guys taken in the first round just because it's a unique class. But if you're not going to be taken in the first couple of rounds, especially this year with as deep as it is, and you're a guy like Travis Etienne who's coming back to the odds-on favorite to win the national championship along with Trevor Lawrence, I mean, why not stay an extra year, put another national championship ring on your finger, and then move on to the NFL when odds may be more in your favor of getting into that first round?
Yeah, that's a great point. Speaking of Tigers, LSU win the national championship. Obviously a really cool story. Good for them. They've got a lot of changes for next year. Joe Burrow probably going to Cincinnati at number one overall. Mm-hmm. Joe Brady, he's now in the NFL at Carolina as their offensive coordinator. And since our last podcast, Dave Aranda is the new head coach at Baylor, taking over for Matt Rhule. LSU reinvented itself, won a national championship, and they might have to do it again.
Well, and so offensively, Steve Emsinger is their offensive coordinator.
Correct, yes.
And Joe Brady was a guy that came in with some new concepts. He delivered those concepts. Obviously, Joe Burrow, LSU, very beneficial in that. But Steve Emsinger is still there calling plays. He can incorporate those new concepts into what he is doing. And I think offensively, they can stay this. They can remain the same type of offense. Now, who's going to be the quarterback? Joe Burrow is gone. He was a special quarterback, had a special year. I don't know what they do at that position. They could be somebody that looks at maybe a Chase Bryce in the transfer portal. If they can do with him what they did with Joe Burrow, obviously that would be you know, kudos to them. But I'm not so concerned offensively in regards to the coaching staff. Defensively, Dave Aranda, been there for a while. He goes on to be the head coach of Baylor. I think that is a huge loss, and it still remains to be seen who he's going to take with him to coach at Baylor. So there could be still some departures that LSU is looking at. But then on the player side of things, when you look at this team, I mean, I'm just going to go down a list of guys. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, starting running back. Justin Jefferson, leading receiver. Jacob Phillips, leading tackler on defense. Grant Delpit, the Jim Thorpe Award winner. You know, we already mentioned Joe Burrow, but both guards, center and left tackle, all gone. And then you think about some of the underclassmen. Thaddeus Moss, again, tight end. Clavon Chaisson. They are losing major production on both sides of the football, along with the coaching staff. This will be a tough job for Ed O, but if there's anybody that's up for it, it's Coach O. And that state is behind him. He loves LSU. He loves that state. And they've one of the top recruiting classes this year. So they'll be able to fill in some holes. But it'll be interesting to see what they do on the coaching side of things. And I mentioned this on a show last Friday. A guy that I think would be a great fit, and we started to hear a little bit about it earlier this week, Bo Pelini.
Yeah.
Former defensive coordinator at LSU. I think it was 2005 to 2007. obviously head coach at Nebraska, and I think Nebraska would look back at those days and say, gosh, I wish we had some more of those, because his worst season there was a 9-win season. Goes and coaches at Youngstown State, hasn't had a lot of success there, but the big question is, after being a head coach for more than a decade, can he make the adjustment and go back to being assistant coach? Does he want to be an assistant coach? And does he want to be an assistant coach at LSU, knowing that you're losing this talent, knowing that you are being the guy that has to come in after a national championship, may not have the same numbers, but it could be an opportunity for him to get back in the Power Five, get back his name back, and become a head coach again. So a lot of factors in play. We'll see how that continues to play out. But that's a lot of change for the national champions.
All right. So with that being said, wrapping things up on Fourth and Short, what right now, your January top five in college football, a lot of people coming out with their way too early power rankings. How do you have it stacked up in the top five?
So my top five, and I'll start with number five, is Oregon. And part of that reason is because what Mario Cristobal has built out there, what he's continued to build out there, is a team that is built up front, offensively and defensively. They're a physical football team. And when you lose a quarterback like Justin Herbert and you try and fill that role with somebody else, it's best to be done when you have good protection and you have a defense that is stingy. And that is what he has done out there. And not only that, but Joe Moorhead, former, you know, offensive coordinator at Penn State, head coach at Mississippi State. Obviously, things didn't go well, but he has proven that he can build an offense. He can be explosive, and I look for them to be the number five team. I know that they lost some offensive linemen. They've lost some talent on offense, namely Justin Herbert, their quarterback, but I believe that they're a team that is built to sustain those losses and can plug and play with some other guys. Florida is my number four. And at the end of the year, this was a team that was defensively one of the best teams in the country. And Kyle Trask at quarterback, he's got talent at receiver. He's got an offensive line that showed great improvement throughout the course of that year. They were young. They're going to come back and be one of the better offensive lines in 2020. So I look for them to be a top contender coming out of the SEC East. Ohio State, hate to admit it, but they are, with Justin Fields, when you have a quarterback like that that's playing at that level, you've got a lot of components around them. I know that they're losing a lot, but they've also recruited extremely well. And so I'm looking for them to be the number three team coming into the season. Alabama is at number two. And I think Alex Leatherwood coming back at left tackle, Najee Harris coming back at running back. The quarterback position is going to be a position with Mac Jones that I think that they're comfortable in, but they also have a freshman coming out of, and his name escapes me right now, coming out of Mater Dei, who a lot of people think he will step into a starting role next year. Mater Dei is obviously a high school down in Southern California. So Matt Leinart, former graduate, Heisman Trophy winner. So they've put out a lot of good talent in the college ranks and also the NFL. So I'm looking for Alabama, speed at receiver, speed on defense, and then Clemson. Trevor Lawrence is the number one reason I would put them as the number one team. Travis Etienne coming back. Brent Venables on defense, or defensive coordinator, showed this year that they can lose talent and still be a very good defense. That talent this year was young. Most of it will be back. So I'm looking for them to be strong on both sides of the ball. Plus, they're playing in the ACC, and the conversation's not going to change. Maybe they'll be a little bit better with teams like North Carolina and Mac Brown being a little bit better, but nobody is going to really contend with Clemson. So they're going to be back in the college football playoffs, but they'll be the number one team coming back.
Bryce Young is the guy I believe you're talking about.
Yes.
From Alabama.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you said it last week, you're going to do something at how Michigan would be in the playoff next year. How do the Wolverines this week get into that top five?
So I'm going to start big picture. And this goes with what I talked about earlier, consistency in regards to all three phases of the game. Defensively with Don Brown, adding in a guy like Bob Shoup. Offensively, you know, special teams with keeping Jay Harbaugh and proponing him to from assistant special teams coordinator to special teams coordinator, and then offensively with Josh Gattis. Another year in this system, another year out in spring football, summer 7-on-7, fall camp. Familiarity breeds success. And this team will be much more familiar with whoever is at quarterback, whoever your running back is, because we had two young running backs last year. We do need to fill some holes up front. I'll get into that in another episode. But for me, the consistency on offense, and we saw Josh Gattis grow as a play caller throughout the course of this season. We saw him make some changes and some bold moves going from the booth to the field. And we saw him continue to coach up guys like Nico Collins and Ronnie Bell on what exactly he wanted done. Now that these players have the concepts and they have seen on the field when Josh Gattis calls a series of plays or when he is in the middle of a game, they can anticipate what is going to be called. They know what it looks like when it goes well. They also very well know what it looks like and what it feels like when it doesn't go well. They'll be able to tweak some things this offseason, and I think just the year two will be better than year one, just for the fact that everybody will understand what Josh Gattis wants, what it looks like, what the expectations are on any given play, any given series, and going into 2020, that gives Michigan a chance to move up the ranks and move into that top five.
Would you rather hang out with a dog or a cat?
Oh, that's an easy one. I'd rather hang out with a dog. Cats, see, the problem with cats is that they think they know better, right? They think that they, you know, hey, I want to lay on your lap. Don't get off of me. I don't want you on my lap. Get your claws off of me. Don't put your little furry face right under my chin unless I want to bend over and pet you, right? If I tell a dog, sit, it sits. You tell a cat to sit, it's going to look at you like, what? You want me to sit? They're arrogant. I don't want anything to do with cats.
Wow.
Dogs, man's best friend, and it will always be my best friend.
Wow. Boy, okay. And that,
we'll end on that. So next week, stay tuned because I'll bring you another reason why Michigan can move into that top five. We'll have that carrying over through all of these podcasts here in the offseason. But thanks for listening to us. Remember, like, subscribe, download as many times as you can. Tell your friends. Give us some feedback. Let us know what's going on.
Yeah, and if you have any would-you-rathers, throw them our way, too. We'll sprinkle in some of the best because I think we can have some fun with John on that.
Yes, because I obviously have no opinion.
Yeah, no. I mean, wow. Cats, terrible. Yes. In the trenches.
Yeah. We'll have all of this on next week's edition of In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.